So our agenda for today is, what we'll try to do is have a final discussion for Zorah, which should also serve as somewhat of a segue between Zorah and Borer. And to that end, what I'd like to focus on today is essentially the relationship between Zorah and Borer or Merakeh. Which means not in the sense of what we've been talking about till now. Last week we focused a lot on the possible differences or reconciliations between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. That's not so much what I'm interested in today. In other words, not necessarily the question of, is Zorah a malacha about separating Ochel and Psolas? Let's assume that it is. Let's work within more of a Bavli perspective. But once we take that position, so how does it connect to the other two? Or how do the other two connect to themselves? What is the relationship between these three malachos? Since our Gemara essentially tells us that, and our Gemara literally meaning the Bavli, and our Gemara specifically here, Ayin Gimel Mibeis, that there is a strong, incredibly strong thematic link between the three, so much so that we have to justify why they're all counted. So what exactly is the nature of that relationship? How are they the same, and how are they different? That's what I'd like to look at a little bit today, and that will again hopefully give us somewhat of a framework to segue right into Borer tomorrow. So one general question, which was on the Makaris already from last week, has to do with Zorah and Borer, and it was a question that Dov raised last week, and it's a question that Rishonim dealt with, and then Achronim brought up as well. Should we be concerned that these malachos don't meet the standard? We have an exemption called malacha shein etzricha legufa. If you have a malacha that is termed the malacha shein etzricha, if you have an action that's termed the malacha shein etzricha legufa, so normally you are patur, according to one opinion of the Gemara Yechayis. The Rambam follows that opinion, but the majority view has been, like that of Reb Shimon, that a malacha shein etzricha legufa is exempt. Now, we discussed last semester at some length, what is a malacha shein etzricha legufa? And the more well-known explanation is really the minority view of Rishon. Right? The more well-known explanation, popularized most recently by the 39 Malacha picture book, which explains, and I think also the Ribbiat's book as well, so many popular texts, this is given as a definition, that the malacha shein etzricha legufa means a malacha that you're doing for a different purpose other than what it was done in the Mishkan. So it's the same action that was done in the Mishkan, but you're doing it for a different reason. But the majority of Rishonim have a different explanation, and they understand that it's a malacha that's done for a positive purpose. And if you're trying to get rid of something, you have some type of a problem, like the example in the Gemara, let's say there is a mace in the house, and you want to take the mace outside. So you're carrying something in that situation, but not because you want the object to be somewhere, but because you want it not to be somewhere. So a lot of the Rishonim see Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa in that framework, that it's about getting rid of a problem, more than it is about doing something positive and constructive. So working within that understanding, the Baal HaMor raises the question, and maybe you saw it this time around, maybe you saw it last semester, and we saw it both times. Why are the malachos of Zorah and Borer, why are they even malachos? Shouldn't we perhaps say that they are malachos that are negative in nature? They're about getting rid of psolas, and therefore maybe they should meet the definition that the whole group of Rishonim, and a lot of the Rishonim who have this negative-based definition, by the way, are building themselves off this Baal HaMor. Not this question that the Baal HaMor asks, but the Baal HaMor and his whole essay over there works off this type of definition from Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa. And a lot of the later Rishonim say, as the Baal HaMor says, this is what Malacha Shein Etzricha Legufa means. So if that's the case, how does Zorah even make the cut as a Malacha at all? So what was the Baal HaMor's basic approach to this question? Sammy? It's a definite that basically it shouldn't make the cut. Right? You're right. It's a problem. Conceptually, it doesn't fit. But that's the Chiddush, that since these malachas were in the Mishkan, even though they have an essentially negative nature, it's going to be counted anyway. Somebody asked me last week, I don't remember who, that maybe this is similar somewhat to what the Rush was saying about using the wind's help, a point we'll also come back to today. That was Sammy, was you here to mention that? So that maybe the point was that in both cases, the malach of Zorah has some type of flaw, either because it's working with the help of the wind or because it's essentially negative in nature. And maybe the answer to both questions, the Rush by the wind and this Balamor, is that you're right. It has protexia. It has connections. That since it was in the Mishkan at the right time in the right place, so it gets on the list, even though it has a problem, even though it has a conceptual issue why it shouldn't be a malach. That was the way the Baal HaMor seems to understand it. The Ramban has a different perspective. And the Ramban says, no, we don't have to see these things as negative. That you're doing a tikkun here. You're essentially fixing up the food or whatever it is you're dealing with. Right, this was the Ramban on Daf Kuvav. So let's not just see this as a negative process, let's see it as a positive process. And part of his understanding was that he sees a whole broader scope of activity here. That we're not just looking at the psoles that you're chasing away, we're looking at the ochel and the psoles together. And the process is an improvement. Just like the point that he was dealing with also, so if somebody cuts his fingernails or cuts his hair, and you might say that's a malacha shenitzvah for the gufa because you're cutting the hair and you're cutting the nails to get rid of them. No, let's not just focus on that. We focus on the whole process here. This is an enhancement of the body, so this is a positive process. But what they share in common, the Baal HaMor and the Ramban, is that they're still really focusing on the activity happening, including the negative part, including the psoles, or the hair or the nails. But because it's a productive purpose, it leaves something better off than it was before, it leaves something enhanced. So then that's not a malacha she'ein tzricha l'gufa, that's a malacha ha'tzricha l'gufa.
It's not
going to
answer the
Yishalmi. It's not going to answer the Yishalmi about it. Okay, right, we're not focusing on that so much. Right now we're going to redirect our attention to within the bodily, just how does this malacha make sense, how does Borer, which is separate from that whole discussion, and how does Zorah fit in with it. So this discussion was, yes sir?
Is it different than the dead person in the house?
Because there you have this external problem, and you basically just don't want the person to be here. You want the person to be somewhere else. And the house is the same house with it or without it. It's just a problem for you to have this body here.
But the nail, the finger is the same thing?
No, now you have beautiful fingers.
And you have a house. What's the difference?
It's the same house. Right? It's just you have a problem functioning in your house. With it, whether it's because of tumor, whether it's because of other issues, you have a problem functioning in your house with this dead body here, but the house is the same house. Well, your nails, part of the treatment of nails is that they need grooming. The grooming means you're cutting away the extra nails, but your fingers are being groomed. You could use that English word to maybe shift the focus, that it's a manicure, you're grooming yourself, which involves cutting away extra things, but it's essentially a positive process towards your hands.
Because it's more frequent?
It's more frequent, but it's an enhancement on the object itself. It's not some type of external problem that showed up and you have to get rid of it. It is part of the maintenance of that object. So the Yeshua's Yaakov has somewhat of a different perspective. It sounds similar, but it has a little bit of a different focus. It sounds like a Ramban, but it's understood a little bit differently, and at first I didn't put the Yeshua's Yaakov on the Maror Mekomos because it's a little harder to get a hold of, but then I recalled afterwards that it's quoted in the Bir Halacha. So tomorrow probably, because I look at it in the Bir Halacha, we'll put it on the list again tomorrow because it's equally relevant to Borer as it is to Zorah, so you could look at the way the Bir Halacha quotes it. The Bir Halacha quotes it in Shin Yotes, basically asking the same question. But his focus is a little bit different, and it comes up with a little bit of a different impact. And that Yeshua Yaakov says that don't think that we're looking at the psolas. The malacha is not about the psolas. The malacha is about the ochel. That this ochel is not roi la'achila right now. You can't use it because it has the psolas mixed in. So what you are doing is you are fixing the psolas, which is similar to the Ramban, except the Ramban basically expands the scope to include everything. So he's still talking about a malacha that's happening with the psolas, while the Yeshua Yaakov's focus is really on the ochel. You're working to fix the ochel, and that's what makes it a positive process. Hi.
So I understand why what the Ramban and the Yeshua Yaakov would be very much different than the
Baal
Mor. No, but the dead body gaze in the Gemara. But here, it does seem, I think, maybe more of a problem, because here it's just tarobet, especially in light that we know that borer is, nothing's connected.
What do you mean by here
in terms of borer, the Yeshua Yaakov, the fact that you're fixing the oka.
Right.
It's sort of the same as fixing the house. You're just removing the dead body, just removing
Well, that's how he's explaining. That's why.
He's saying that's why
it's not a malachim shirichul gufa. He's saying he starts with a question that it should be in a shirichul gufa. But he says, because we look at the ochel, that will now become purified from the psolas,
so that's
what makes it a positive malacha. But then he goes on to say that that's going to limit the scope, and it's certainly the way the Bir Halacha expands on it a little bit, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow in the context of Borer. He says that if that's the case, so it's not going to explain every situation that we call Borer. Because, for example, as we discussed last week a little bit, we use Ochel and Psolas as not just objective terms, but also as relative terms. It doesn't just mean food and waste matter, but we also use it to mean whatever we want and whatever we don't want. So if we have two types of food and they're both perfectly good food items, and we happen to be interested in one of them, we call that the ochel, and we call the other one psolas. So the Yeshua Yaakov says that's going to be a problem for my definition. It's going to come out that that's not really a malacha hatzricha legufa, because you're not fixing any food. The food's perfectly edible. You happen to be interested in one part of it. But the food is 100% valid. So that issue...
It's still contradicts, because the part of the food that you want now is separates.
Right, but apparently separating itself is not necessarily a
tikkun. The food itself, and the food that you want. Out of the all food that you had here, with the mix of whatever you want and don't have, even though all of them are food and all of them are eatable, you still have the food that you want to eat by itself now, and you can only eat the food that you want.
Right, that's a very subjective definition, to call this food enhanced, because it's the food that you want, and to say that now that's a positive tikkun, that the food has become completed just because it was perfectly valid food a minute ago, but it happens to be just what I'm interested in. So it's a little bit of a harder definition. So that is an issue that the Yeshua Yaakov leaves open, and the Bir Halacha talks about that, so tomorrow when we get more into Borer, we'll talk about that a little bit more. But essentially, it leaves us with three perspectives as to why it is that Borer and Zora are malachos, and not malachos in Shricha Legufa. Either protexia, and it's basically its connection to having been in the Mishkan that lets it override the rules, or it's that we look at this whole process as essentially an enhancing process, or we focus specifically on the Ochel, not on the Psolas, and the Ochel is indeed being enhanced. So this leaves open an interesting question. What are we saying here when we say that this is not an issue of malacha shein tzricha legufa? And this is a question some of the later sources get into. So are we saying that basically Zorer and Borer are insulated from malacha shein tzricha legufa concerns? Like we see a little bit perhaps in the context of the spitting case and some of the other cases, that what if you're doing this malacha in its tzura, but you're not interested in the separation at all? So should we perhaps argue that the whole concept of malacha shein tzricha legufa doesn't affect these malachos? So it seems to be affected by this whole understanding, right? So are we going to say that somehow we explain these malachos as being not a part of this concern? Or should we say no, that strictly speaking, you could still have an issue of zora shlo tzara gufa, or bora shein tzricha legufa? It's not that they're immune from this issue. It's just the question was, how could they even get off the ground? How could they even be malachas called Zorah and Borer, since they are fundamentally Ein Tzricha L'Gufa? And these questions are saying, these answers are saying, no, they're not fundamentally in Yisrael Chalabuf. They work on some theoretical level. But if you're doing that malacha for not the purpose of Zorah or Borer, then it would still be a Ptur of Ein Yisrael Chalabuf. So that's an issue which is addressed a little bit by the Magen Avos. It was mentioned in the past. The Magen Avos is a sefer by Rav Mordechai Benet. Lived in the 1700s. It's available for free download from HebrewBooks.org. So he talks a little bit about that question. Are we essentially, quotes the Balamor, and then he talks about a situation which might be Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, and we have to figure out, so are we saying Malachos are outside of that concern completely? It's some type of an exception? Or no, they're not really outside. It's just that the normal function of Zorah and Borer are Tzricha L'Gufa, but theoretically you could be doing it in Tzricha L'Gufa. Jonathan?
If these arguments of the Balamor and the Ramban are all according to the Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa definition that we gave to the Rov, but not right. According to Tosos, and we possibly like Tosos, shouldn't it be no problem at all to do a Tosos Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa?
I mean, it should be Mutter, you mean?
It should be
a Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. Right, so presumably the halacha, so we discussed the Sugya Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. We mentioned it's a little bit of a question how we paskin. So some of the contemporary texts do seem to favor that view of Tosfos. It's not 100% clear that that's the way we paskin, but it seems like a popular position. So if you take that view, so then you have a straighter path, right? Then these malachos don't really have a kasha to begin with, and certainly within the view of Tosfos, if Tosfos means you're defining everything by the Mishkan, not by positive or negative, so then yes, it would come out that Zorah and Borer should have basically the same type of rules as any other malacha, and it's all based on, do you do it for the Mishkan reason, or do you do it for a different reason? So that's a general issue that comes up with all of these malachas. Are we focusing on what is left behind? Are we focusing on what we're removing? Are we focusing on the whole process? Is this somehow consistent with a constructive goal? Is it an exception? All of these are broad questions that are relevant to this separation set in general. So how do these three relate to each other? Right? We know that our Gemara gives a surface answer. Our Gemara says two things. One, that they are all very similar to each other. Hainu, hainu, hainu. They all seem to be linked. And the reason they get their own stature is because Kal Milsi the Havi B'Mishkan Afal Gav the Ikka D'Damila. Right, so that anything that's in the Mishkan, even though there are others that are very similar, that are also listed, still Chashivla, still gets counted. So that's step one to an answer. But we see, if you got a chance to look a little bit this morning, that there's more to be said about this. Right? So apparently what the Gemara tells us is they're very similar, but they were different enough to be noticed as different actions in the Mishkan. So there's some difference, there's some commonality, but there's also some difference, and it's left to us or to the Rishonim to try to spell out a little bit where the difference is. So if you got to see a little bit some of the Rishonim, what you could find is probably at least three different ways in which the three are distinguished from each other. And one thing we need to figure out is, are these absolute different shitas? Are they overlapping shitas? Are they just highlighting different elements? So what are some of the ways in which the Rishonim bring up that the three malachos can be distinguished within each other? Well, grant, they're all about separating ochel from solas, but they're different in ways other than that. Gil?
They're all necessary to do the tzedakah.
Okay, so that's probably the last of the views, right, that they... It's not that we do one or the other, but if we look at a process like Sidur of the Pas, so we see that they could all happen. You could have one process, which would require all three to happen. It requires a Zriya, it requires a Borer, it requires a Merakeh, it requires all of these things to happen, even though they are all functioning towards the same goal, but they're not happening instead of each other, they're happening one after each other, and could all be happening in the same process. So who says something like that? The Ran has an idea like that. The Ran has a couple of different comments, which as we'll see partially, these things are not necessarily exclusive to each other. The Bartanura, someone mentioned the Bartanura seems to bring up that point. Right? The Rashash over here comments along those lines as well, referring to the Bartanura. So that's one element, that maybe the fact that a process could require all three of these things to happen, if they really all did the identical thing and they're interchangeable, so then pick one. And let's put them all in the same category. But the fact that the same process could, you could make bread, and in the process of making bread, you have to do all three of them, so that itself should give it three separate identities. Jonathan?
You do them as different tools.
Okay, so another issue that Rishonim bring up is that you use different tools. Who says like that?
Tosfos Rosh.
Tosfos Rosh is interesting. Let's come back to Tosfos Rosh. Tosfos Rosh probably does say that and fleshes it out a little bit more. So let's come back to Tosfos Rosh in a second, but you're right about that. But Rashi seems to say that. Right, Rashi where? On the Mishnah, right? And there's two Rashis. But Rashi on the Mishnah does seem to say like that, seems to emphasize the different tools. And the Ran on the Mishnah in the Rif, it also seems to focus on that. We're using a special rachas, winnowing shovel, if we're calling it Zora. We're using a sieve for Merake. And maybe it's all about tools. We have to figure out, is that enough to segregate things? Maybe on a total level we sometimes find that, right? We talked about that. We talked about Choresh a few months ago, that Choresh has a bunch of toldos which are all rooted in Choresh, but maybe just what defines them according to some of the Rishonim might be the tools that are used. Okay, so maybe that's a significant issue. Maybe not. You have to figure out whether or not that's enough to justify different categories. And what else? Jonathan?
They'll process different things.
Okay, so then they have different targets, basically. Different items that are used. Zora focuses on what? On wheat and chaff, the classical model. While Borer, we use the word tsraros, like it's pebbles. It doesn't mean only pebbles, but it means things like that. While Merake deals more with flour, things that are of that type of substance. Now again, is that enough to make different categories? Maybe. Gil?
When we're doing culture, don't we say that Goze is, like, that it would be different because it's on an animal as opposed to that? And it's in essence the same thing, but they're two different models also.
Right, so if you want to use that example, right, so it depends on how you define those terms, but we saw a model that possibly kotzer and gozes might basically only distinguish from each other in terms of what you're doing. That kotzer maybe is about plants and gozes is maybe about animals, but they're essentially the same type of action, assuming we define those terms in that way. So that is true, so you could say that could be a model to define terms differently, but to define malachos differently, even though they're basically the same thing on different objects. But there is probably a bigger difference between plant life and animal life than flour and wheat. The difference is much more narrow here in terms of justifying a different malacha in this way, but the point is well taken. Sammy, did you have a comment?
Well, you know, at least the line of the Ran seemingly applies both two of them together.
Okay. Right, so he throws in that in his manecha. Right, so that's an important point that we also see Rishonim mixing these elements. Right? And we have to winnow out which reason seems to be the ikker, or is any of them the ikker. Right? So it's not necessarily the case that some of these differences, for example, the difference of what you're using, which as the Egle Tal points out, right, focuses on the poel, on the action being within a certain form, while what you are acting upon on the nifal, you know, that which is benefiting from this work. So that difference may or may not be the ikar, or maybe one of many. Maybe there's a whole package. For example, did anyone get a chance to see the Meiri? Right, the Meiri seems to throw in everything. Right? It seems to invoke all of these differences when talking about what distinguishes them. And Tosfos is unclear, and so Jonathan correctly brought up the Tosfos HaRash, which modifies Tosfos, but the Tosfos on our daf is very unclear. Tosfos Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, I wonder if you got a chance to see that. So at the end of that Tosfos Af Al Gav, so what's the language there? Right, Zoru Boru Merake Heim Shloshu Dvar. Thank you. There are three things. So what does that mean? There are three things. So Tosfos Arash, perhaps explaining this, and this could really mean anything. This saying is three things, but the Tosfos Arash puts in there that each tool can accomplish what the other tool can't accomplish. It's not just a matter of pick your weapon, but different needs require different types of tools, and that itself is indicative of something more significant, apparently. And a sieve, for example, will work if you have a flour that has different impurities that fit the holes in the sieve. But if you're dealing with a different type of substance, then it's not going to help at all. So each tool does a different type of thing. So maybe that's indicative, not only that you happen to choose this tool over that tool, but it's indicative that there's a different type of taruvus here, there's some kind of different kind of mixture that requires a different strategy, so each mixture deserves its own status. Sammy?
Well, if Boer is Biyah, so then you can do any of them Biyah.
Oh, so then that itself, as we'll get into a little bit more tomorrow, shows that Boer has something else going on. It requires a little bit more definition in terms of calling it Biyad. What do we mean by that? You know, it must be a stand-in for a broader definition of Borer that we'll have to fill in a little bit more tomorrow. Jonathan, comment?
In light of all the ambiguity of the Rishonim, especially the Tosfos, is there any way to say that they're really sort of just saying all one thing and just three ways of sort of phrasing it?
Except that we need more, they're all saying the same idea.
All the three, even though that sometimes they happen to bring like the Miri, all of them in one thing, aren't they really the same thing? The fact that you need different kalim, isn't that obvious if you're dealing with different things that you're processing? And if you're dealing with different things that you're processing, obviously you're doing one after the other and not all, you can't do them, it's different things. Isn't
that they all could be linked. Right? Whether they're saying exactly the same thing, maybe it's harder to say, but they all could be linked. That since you could say each one leads to the other, that since you need to do all three, so therefore they're all affecting a different type of separation that's necessary, and each type of separation requires its own tool. So they're all getting it. So they're all basically getting at the same idea, and it's not necessarily some machlokas here, as again indicated by the fact that some of the Rishonim are mixing terms. But these are all different clues to some type of inherent difference where everyone can harmoniously be brought onto the same page. It's a very viable possibility. So, taking now these, let's say, two elements to trying to figure out how these malachos interact with each other, right? First, the fundamental question of how do these malachos become malachos at all? Are they malachos shena tzriach l'gufa, or is there a positive definition? And then the question of how do they distinguish from each other? So let's now look at how those questions can affect some other issues. So, for example, what is the shear for Zora? What's the minimum amount which has to be involved in order for me to be chayyid in Zora? Bill? So, grogris, right? Who says that explicitly? Well, the Rambam says it explicitly. Well, Rashi kind of implies it on the Mishnah when he says everything other than Choresh. But the Rambam that we saw the first day, the Rambam certainly mentions specifically a grogris. Grogris itself is a shear that's been attached to all of food-related malachos, basically most of the first 11. You could ask some questions. You know, first of all, in order to define a shear, so we have to know what we're acting upon. Are we talking about the ochel, or are we talking about the psoles? Right, which is an issue that's going to come up in Borer also. Right, so that gets back to the whole Ramban Balamora question. What is the subject of our attention? Are we interested in what we're chasing away, which shouldn't really be a malacha except of the chiddush of these malachos, or are we interested in what we're leaving behind? So that's one question that has to be clarified in order to figure out where the shear is determined. Hi?
Did you say that it's a shear including both?
Possibly. Right, we saw that example. What previous malacha did we see? Something like that? Possibly. Saw with Ma'amer a little bit, right? That there was a view that Gleital discussed that Ma'amer means gathering together, but maybe Ma'amer could include something that was already there. And so maybe here you could have such a process as well. So this is somewhat of an open question, but part of the issue is going to be how exactly are we defining what this malacha is. Now, what if you do less than a shear? What if you happen to winnow less than a grover's? Whatever we want to focus on, let's say we decided what we're focusing on, and the malacha that you did was pachos mikashir, so you're pater, right? That's what it means to have less than a shir. But is it mutter to do that? So what's the rule when we leave a chatzi shir? So normally we assume it's asur, and we pass in asur min ha-Torah. It's machlokas in the Gemara, and we spent some time talking about this last semester, that a shir is usually only relevant for punishment, but less than a shir, if it's a malacha, or if it's eating a prohibited substance, sorry?
If it's in the Rabban, you'd be loving
it. Theoretically, right, because the punishment in the Torah, let's leave that aside because it will confuse things, but the shir is usually relevant primarily for punishment, but less than that is generally prohibited, and we assume prohibited in the Torah. So it would seem that that should be the case here as well. If you're going to zora less than a shir, it should be aser, pater, but it should be prohibited to do. Sammy?
Unless you're assuming like the Yerushalmi.
Okay, why does Yerushalmi, oh, the Yerushalmi about what the shir is?
No, well.
Because there are those who raise that. You know, there were those.
Meaning because according to the Yerushalmi, if you don't have a full bogrus, then you have
the correct, so there, that
is. No matter how much you do, until you have a complete separation, so then you're never going to be high for anything.
Right, the Yerushalmi is saying that by Borer, they're not going to say that by Zoreh, because the Yerushalmi is going to distinguish between the two. There are those who want to suggest, by the way, this was a debate in the Achronim, there are those who want to say that the very grogerous shir itself maybe is machlokas the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. Because the Yerushalmi talks about spitting, it's probably not a grogerous. And so there are those who argue that the Yerushalmi disputes this whole shir. While others say, no, everything has its own standard, so maybe spitting would have a less of a shear because that's the normal way of doing it, but when you're dealing with food, there still would be a shear of a grover's. But it sounds like that the Gemara talks about, the Gemara in Beitza, if you saw it on this morning's Makaros, about doing basically a separation with your hands of the molo molilos. Right? So you have this little winnowing that you're doing in your hands, which the Gemara seems to permit on Shabbos. You started from before Shabbos, and then you basically winnow it out with your hands. So there, it's not clear why it's permitted, but it seems to be that we're dealing with a smaller than sheer substance, which seems to be part of it. So there are those who maintain that maybe this is somehow an exception to the rule as well, and that maybe less than a shir is mutter when it comes to Zohar. So that's a very striking idea. Some of the latest foreign point that out.
What?
So I think Michael's hand was up first.
Could you be over Makabapatish?
Why is it not a shir mutter? So usually has its own state, usually not one of the other malachas, though sometimes it could be both. But the question how you define Makabapatish involves a lot of other issues that we'll have to deal with separately. It's a fair question, but it'll take us a little bit far afield. So that would be a striking idea, that if this is an exception now to a couple of rules, right, that maybe it doesn't have to be positive in the standard sense, maybe it's unique in the way wind plays a role, and maybe it doesn't even have an Isra Chatzi Shir, is a striking idea, really would separate this malacha from other malachas.
Why is it similar and not really using?
So then what exactly are you using, right? That's quite, are you using air, are you using your mouth? And your mouth may be a problem with Zohar also, if it's a full shear, as we'll discuss in a few minutes. Right, if you saw the Ben Hanan, we'll seem to say that. We'll come to that in a few minutes. So these are all striking possible exceptions that may be relevant to Zohar specifically, may be relevant to Borer also. Sammy mentioned the fact that Yerushalmi seems to require an absolute accomplishment with Borer, so that would also seem to confuse the whole shear issue. So these are some striking possible points. So in terms of how these three malachos relate to each other, so there is a fascinating and controversial chiddush of the Eglei Tal, that the Eglei Tal suggests that in terms of being chayav for a shir, this is an area where you can combine the three malachos. And that if you do a third of a shir with zriya, and a third of the shir with borer, and a third of the shir with harkada, you could put that all together and be chayav. Clearly that's a unique idea. right? Because normally we assume the malachas are distinct from each other. So here, this suggestion, which Rosh Pesach Frank, for example, disputes, would be suggesting a unique relationship between these three malachos. They're separate enough to be counted, but they could also be combined into one big action, which is a challenging concept because it really reduces the purpose of separating them, of counting them separately. It should be ironic. So that's that would be a striking chiddush as well. Hi.
Is there a way to say where he got this idea from?
So you can read it inside Al Shaysay. It has to do with his basic understanding of the Gemara of Hainu, 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 that they're all one big process. And the Menachas Chinuch considers, which might be a bigger chiddush, because really, again, throws into question what is relevant. And Menachas Chinuch actually rejects this point. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger, in his chiddushin to the Gemara, asserts the following very big chiddush, that according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, you could give hasra for one on the other. Right, which is really going to throw things into a big confusion. So if you see somebody doing Zora, you could give him Hasra for Bore. So that's very striking for a couple of reasons. And the Menachas Chinuch explicitly says not this way. The Menachas Chinuch explicitly says that the significance of them being different is that you can't give Hasra for one or the other. And a little bit of background as to why that's so striking is because we had the opportunity to discuss a little bit last semester. So in general, it's a question why the Gemara cares all the time. When you do action A, you do action B, the Gemara often asks, what malacha is it? Is it this malacha, or is it that malacha? So the Rishonim ask, why do we really care? If we know something is Chil Shabbos, right, and we're not really dealing with Karbanos Bizman Hazeh, so why do we care whether somebody is violating malacha A or malacha B? So Tosfos deals with the issue and says, well, maybe you might think that I need to know, because maybe the process of Hasra requires not just that you tell somebody he's being Mechalel Shabbos, but you have to be specific about the malacha. So maybe that's why the Gemara cares. You have to, it's called Hasra B'Shem Ha'ad. Sorry, Tosfos considers this point. Other Rishonim have this point as well. And Tosfos, in the end, doesn't adopt this view. Right? Tosfos says that, no, you don't really have to be master of B'Shem Ha'av. It is enough to tell somebody that they're being Mechal Shabbos without being more specific. But let's say you choose to be more specific. Right? Let's say you decide to help the guy out to understand what he's doing. So then, says Tosfos, if you use the wrong Av, so then that's going to be a problem because the guy's going to think you're making fun of him. Right, so if you see somebody starting a fire and you say, how could you do that? You're writing on Shabbos. You're violating Kosev. So he's going to think you're joking with him. He's not going to pay attention. It's not going to be a serious Hasra. But if you just told him you're being Mechal Shabbos, that would have been enough. So if that's the case, you can't use the wrong Av. So what Mr. Akiva Eiger seems to be saying is that, yeah, you can't give the ridiculous example we just gave. You can't tell somebody who's starting a fire that he's writing. But very similar actions, you can. You can tell this specific example of very similar malachos. You can say you're doing Bora, Zora, and Merakeh. They're all the same set. Now, the problem is, as Jonathan pointed out in the question I've referred to in the past, that there's one Gemara, at least, that sounds very much not like that, because there's a Gemara later, we'll talk about it in Bora and Merakeh. There's a Gemara that talks about Meshamer, which is also a related activity, and the Gemara wants to know specifically, is it Bora or is it Merakeh? And we'll get into it specifically in Merakeh, what the significance of that question is. So it seems like even within these three malachas, we are interested in knowing which one it is, and it's got to have some nafkamin. So the Menachas Chinuch and the Shisus HaShabbos and others don't accept this chiddush of the Akiva Eiger. Not necessarily quoting it directly, but it's clear that they don't adopt this position. But again, this would be a very interesting expansion of how the three could be interrelated while being different at the same time. That maybe they're different enough to get a different status in the list, but maybe the same enough, if we want to say the Egle Tal's idea that they can be under one shear collection. But we want to say that Makiva Eger's Chiddush, that they could all be Musra together, they could all be brought in on one warning. All of that is interesting. So what about the different ways in terms of how they were distinguished? So how interested are we in terms of the tzuras, in terms of the specific format of the malacha? So one question that was brought up a few minutes ago is, so what if you don't use the wind, but you use your breath, let's say? So you use ruach piv in order to do zora. So that's an important question, because it has important ramifications lahalacha. And it's not really clear what the story is. If you're looking at Rabbi Ribiat's book, so he's very machmer on this, on blowing for the purposes of separation, understanding that's an issue of Zohar. And there is some basis in the Rishonim. Not so many Rishonim who talk about it, but who does talk about it? Right, Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel on Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, right, does say that pretty explicitly, that using your breath, using your mouth, that is also a form of Zohar. And it could be that it sounds like that from the Aruch. So this is the way that the Yerushalmi, also sounds like a pretty Yerushalmi on this morning's list, if you had a chance to see it, right? It sounds like from the way the Korban HaEidah explains the Yerushalmi, that the Yerushalmi gives a case of a woman separating chitin and calls it Zohar, and the Korban HaEidah explains that she was blowing on it, she was using her breath in order to separate it. So it does sound like that from a number of sources. But going back to other Gemara and Beis, that we mentioned a few minutes before about the Molo Malilo, so there it sounds like that could possibly also involve blowing. And there it seems to be permissible. So it's a somewhat of a debated question, even though, again, some of the contemporary Sfarim are machmir on this, as to what the status of breath is. And the Aruch HaShulchan happened to be mekel on this. The Aruch HaShulchan in Shin Yates writes that he seems to be very sure about the fact that if somebody is blowing, then that's not Zohar. Which is quite striking, and others ask on him based on the Rabbeinu Chananel. Others say he seems to be therefore against Rishonim. So if you look in the Sefer Torah's Malachas, for example, which is a relatively recent and comprehensive Sefer, so if you look in the Torah's HaMalachas on Zohar, so he goes through this a little bit, but kind of leaves you a little bit ambiguous on this point also, because in the end he refers to the Aruch HaShulchan and notes that there are those who challenged him, but then also notes that he thinks there's a statement to the Aruch. We mentioned the Aruch a minute ago being quoted the other direction, but he notes that there could be an implication of the Aruch this way. Then maybe there is a basis in Rishonim to explicitly say that blowing is not Zohar. So what's his conclusion? It's not clear. He kind of ends on that note, his discussion at that point. So this is somewhat of an open issue, and it's an important open issue because it affects halacha a lot. Yo?
What would be the feel of that? One's man-made?
Oh, so that's the question I want to ask you now. So why would I distinguish? So if I were to say that blowing is not Zohar, that only using the wind is Zohar, so why should it be different?
Anyone
want to take a stab at that? Sorry?
It's not kederach.
So you could say it's just a technicality, right? This is, I think, what Jonathan's getting at. Listen, we have a derech of this malacha, and this is not the derech. Right? So parenthetically, we can insert here also that there is a discussion about whether or not one is violation of Zohar if one doesn't use the rachas, if one doesn't use the funneling, the winnowing shovel, but uses his hands. Right, so instead of taking this shovel and sending it up to the skies, you use your hands and throw it up to the skies. So are you chayef zohar for that? So the Menachas Chinuch thinks no. He thinks that this is a core definition that you're going to use this tool. And if you use your hands, he says you're potter.
In any melacha?
Well, potter of zohar. This is not zohar.
What about now, every malacha that you're not using the tool to...
Right, so that every malacha has its own definition, so you got to take them one by one. One of the questions that's been raised in the past, and we don't have an easy answer for, it's worth reading if you have some time, as it happens to be the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, in his discussion about the Malachos and the Tal Harim in the back, right? He has his Tshuvas Arachayim, two volumes of Tshuvas and Arachayim, and the first volume, the back, there's a whole separate section about the Malachos. So he has a lot of Tshuvas about Shabbos that are with the normal Tshuvas, and then in the back, he goes through the Malachos one by one, and there are footnotes there from his grandson, just like on the Kray Kodesh, there are footnotes in the bottom from his grandson. So there, his whole discussion about Zora is about this issue. We quoted him yesterday about Zora in a different malacha, because he had brought it in Agav talking about Shochet, when we talked about spraying the insects. But when he talks about Zora head on, in that section, so it's all about this, about what's called Kalachar Yad by Zora. And as we've brought up in the past, there is a little bit of a difficulty. We talk about Hilchos Shabbos, so we get confused sometimes, because sometimes we find something is not kederach, let's say, and that'll mean that it's pater, that it's usher, but it's not chayv, because it gets knocked down a peg because it's lo kederach. And sometimes we find that it's even more than that, that a malacha has a certain format, and that if you deviate from that format, it's not the malacha at all. It's not even usher midrabanan. We talked about that in the context of disha, that maybe disha requires that you want what you're getting out, and if it's not that, then it's not derech disha, but we say not derech in the sense that it's a drabanan, not derech in that it's not the malach at all. So we don't have a clear set of rules to know when something is deviating enough to be not chayiv, and when it's deviating enough to not even be the malach at all, and it may be somewhat subjective, it may be a question of degree, that maybe we find the same terminology, the same word derech, used in both contexts, but sometimes we mean it in one sense, that it's just off the path a little bit, so it's a drabanan, and sometimes we mean it's so fundamentally different that it's not the malach at all. So we don't have a clear set of rules as to know what we're talking about. But here also, so we have that potential issue that maybe Zora requires a certain Zura, so if it's not with the tool, but it's with your hands, so the Mechaschina, for one, and others agree, think that you're pater. While the Egle Tal says, no, you're not pater, it's a tolda. And so you're chayef for a tolda, but a tolda also suggests a certain remove. Okay, so the Av Malacha is using the tool, and you do the same thing with your hands, it's a tolda. So all of this goes to the question of how focused are we in the Tzura. That if the Tzura is one of the elements that allows us to list three different malachas here, so how married are we to that specific format? How much has to be included? And that could be the issue with Pet. Maybe if you're blowing on it instead of using the wind, maybe the only difference is that it deviates from the format, it deviates from the protocol, but maybe it's not otherwise fundamentally different. Or maybe it is. But we'll address that possibly in a second. I think there was Sammy and then Michael.
We've been mentioning a lot of the Gemara and Lilos.
Yes.
Doesn't Rashi over there say that it's Dash Kilacher yet?
So but why shouldn't it also be, why shouldn't it also involve Zohar?
Because perhaps Zohar is only after Dash.
Right.
And then so you also already when you're using it in your hands, you're totally separating it, and it's like falls off. It's like peeling an orange. You don't have Zohar by peeling an orange.
So you're saying the falling away is
meaning it's
incidental.
Like when you, it's when
the
you,
fact that the waste part falls away, but you're still getting rid of that waste.
Right.
So, right. Meaning, so that's, but that's
especially if you hold, if you're, I mean, the Gemara over there talks about, you know, either chad b'chad, like you're doing it one with, you know, your fingers and you're taking it away, or chad b'tray with two fingers or whatever. So it's like there's no tarovas here to even deal with. There is no.
Well, once you've extracted the shells, there are.
Why?
Because now you have
in one shell.
But now you have them all in your hands. So how are you getting rid of the?
It's off. Meaning it's like peeling an orange.
But that's that process of how you're getting rid of it is what the Gemara is addressing a little bit.
Right. So
but you're right. You're right that there's enough ambiguity in that Gemara to allow all those who disagree not to deal with it. Because, you know, there's enough ambiguity as to what exactly is dealing with, is being dealt with. So it's one of those sources that work for whichever position you want, in a sense, because you can either be miyaches to it as a Zohar issue or not be miyaches to it as a Zohar issue. But so to go back to this question, so why should, if you assume that blowing on it is not Zohar, so why should it be different? So it could be that it's a technical issue, it's just not the Tzura, or it could be something more fundamental. What could be more fundamental, which Gil already alluded to in his question, right? Shailas Chacham Chatzi Tshuva. So when you ask the question, you already alluded to a possible approach.
Natural or?
Also, if it's, well, so if it's man-made, right, if you're providing it, so why should that be such a fundamental difference? Why should that be? And if we assume, for example, as we mentioned yesterday, la halacha, the poskim do assume that if I have a fan or something like that, and I let that blow what I'm using, so that, let's say we can assume for sure that that is chayiv, you know, that is us. And so there isn't a fundamental difference, la halacha, between holding something up to the wind and holding it up to a fan, or throwing it to the wind, throwing it to a fan. So why should your breath be fundamentally on the other side? Yeah?
Because a fan is just redirecting the wind.
Like the fan is the wind, okay.
The fan is the wind. Your breath is not the same stuff that's out there.
Okay, that's one way of looking at it. Yes, all right.
Basically, the duration of time, how long it's going to be blowing.
Okay, so how do we define that? That's a little, it's a subjective, a quantitative duration. Saying that the...
I mean, you can say greater than, like, one breath's length.
So we have to figure out a way to define it, right? Which gives us, we try to avoid quantitative definitions because they get harder to nail down. But maybe that's more of a clue of something, right? That it's more finite. That the fact that it's going to stop, even though wind also comes and goes, not always windy, but the wind is inherently there, so to speak, in the forces of nature, and the fact that your breath is going to stop maybe defines it differently. So maybe that's a relevant point. Donnie?
Does anyone say that your breath is worse?
It's more of a malacha?
Yeah.
Not to worse to make it more Zohar. Maybe you push it into the Zohar, the Borer category, which we'll have to see.
So it removes the Grumma factor.
Oh, so that could be an issue, right? So maybe the Grumma factor, so to speak, which is normally a Ptur, but maybe it's inherent in this malacha, right? That maybe a part of what defines Zohar is that it entails bringing it to the stature of the status of wind usage. And maybe if you're providing the separation in yourself, even though you're using your lungs rather than your fingers, maybe that's not Zohar. Maybe it is Borer. Or maybe it falls through the cracks because it's not going to technically fit any of the definitions. So maybe it's a combination of both answers. Right, that maybe Zohra requires specifically the externality of the wind, so it's not going to be Zohra, and then maybe it'll be something else, but maybe not, because maybe we have the technical Tzura requirements, and maybe it'll fall through the cracks of any of the three, which again has a nice winnowing imagery. Yes?
Is there a time shear? There's an amount shear, but is there a time shear? Meaning maybe you're not able to do a Grover in any given breath.
So we don't seem to have a time sharing option for that. Sorry, that was a bad one. We don't seem to have a time share as far as that. It's a chiddush in general, which came up in the Chatzi Shir discussion, that it seems to be only food that really has a time share as well as a quantity share. The idea of kedei achilas pras.
Someone could blow Friday night. Half a shear, and then...
That's what it seems like. It seems like at least within the same Shabbos that should be one unit.
But then
if you want to do half of it this Shabbos and half of it next Shabbos, you're going to get fired because you're an extremely slow worker. But, you know, that may be something else to talk about. But or maybe even that. But it seems to be that time shear are mostly focused on eating. That eating has to be within Kedei Achilas Pras, and that's unique to eating for the most part. Okay, another, so that's something you're going to have to investigate. Another surah issue, if you saw the Mishnah on Kuf Mem that was on this morning's Makaros, so the Mishnah talks about, and if you look at, let's look at it together, the Mishnah on Kuf Mem, the end of the Mishnah is talking about some examples which have something to do with Merakeid mostly. But it also includes v'lo yidnenu ein kovrim esateven v'kvara v'lo yidnenu, this sateven you shouldn't put al gabe makom gavoa on a high place b'shvil sheyered hamotz, so that the chaff should fall away. Right. So instead of throwing it into the wind, you are dropping it off a cliff, basically. And you saw the Meiri does invoke the wind. You're going to fall, you're going to drop it, and the wind's going to come and separate it. And yet, the Rambam's classification of this whole entire Mishnah seems to be that these are the Rabbanans. So apparently, this is enough of a deviation from the normal format of Zohar, even though it looks a lot like Zohar, that this is enough of a deviation from the format that maybe we are very married to the format, which is would be an interesting idea. Yes, sir?
Isn't that different from the normal Ram of Shinta that we've seen, where he's more focused on the Tachlis of the Mulafa?
Yeah. That's true. He does, in terms of defining the malachos, yeah, right, that he does tend to say that if something shares a tachlis, it can become an ob very easily.
Right.
So how exactly that relates to this is an interesting question. Okay, so with all of that background, let's try to finish this up today, so we go to Borer. So let's come back to another issue, which we talked about a little bit last week, but let's see that in the context now. Right, so we saw this whole issue of the involvement of wind in this process and how unique it is to Zohar to be somewhat of an open question, right? Because the Gemara in Bava Kamma asks, how liable are you when you go into partnership with the wind? Right, so if you damage somebody's property with fire and the fire gets where it's going because you and the wind partnered up, so the Gemara discusses that question, the implication over there that you should be putter if the wind is doing most of the work. And the Gemara asked, well, what about Shabbos? Right? We see that Zoah v'ruach m'sayaso, you are chayiv. And the Gemara had a couple of different approaches. One of the approaches that we didn't focus on, by the way, has a very interesting implication, that there are those who suggest, there's a discussion about this in the Minchas Tehillim, that if I throw something into the air and it's not windy yet, and the wind comes along later, that maybe I should be putter for that. Maybe I'm only chayiv if the wind is here now. Which is an interesting suggestion. Right? That maybe, sorry?
I think it's obvious that you'd be putter.
It's not so obvious, it's a discussion, but then one of the answers in the Gemara Bava Kamma seems to sound a little bit like that. And that, if you wanted to read, I didn't put this on the Mar Makomlis because it was very, very long and it's a little bit hard to pinpoint the key words, but if you want to take a look, there is a Ber HaGola. The Ber HaGola is on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch. So towards the end of Choshen Mishpat, where it talks about Nezikin, sorry?
It's
not, so maybe it is B'Kavana, but you're planning on it. It's even more of a remove than normally, right? So here this is somewhat grammatic, right? This is somewhat grammative in that you're causing it, letting the wind do it. But maybe there's an extra move if you're going to throw it up and then the wind will eventually show up. Maybe even if you're doing that knowingly, maybe that's even more of a remove. So
maybe
we don't necessarily...
How is it going to be massive?
Maybe you'll say, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to throw it up and I'm going to hope the wind will eventually come. Maybe that's something you can pinpoint. Maybe. But if you're interested in that discussion about that vis-a-vis Nezikin and the difference between Nezikin and Shabbos, there's a long baragol on the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch who talks about that in Taft Yud Ches in Choshen Mishpat. Again, I didn't put it on the Mar Makomos because we would probably struggle with it for a long time because it's very involved, but you can just be aware of that Mar Makom. So that was one issue that possibly comes out of that Gemara. But we focused more, and we'll focus again now on the last line of that sugya, where the Gemara emphasizes, well, Shabbos and Nezikin are different. Because Shabbos has the magical Meleches Machsheves machine. Right? The magical Meleches Machsheves makes Shabbos worse, makes Shabbos more chayiv, so to speak. So we discussed a little bit last week that we're not really sure what that answer means. Does that answer mean that Shabbos as a whole works with wind, that there is a causative factor that we grant power in Shabbos and not elsewhere? Or is it really specific to Zohar? Because since Zohar requires wind as its definition, that's going to make it chayiv, right? Which is what the Rush had said. Right? The Rush said this is the definition of the Malacha, so therefore it's included. Sounds like it's a specific Zohar interpretation. Or alternatively, you could say, no, Meleches Machsheves means that if your plan comes off the way you want it to, then you're chayiv for that as a quirk of Shabbos, but not by other things. Which, by the way, if you look at Rashi in Bava Kamma, which was significantly shorter than the Yad Ramah, Rashi pretty much says that. Probably should have pointed that out last week. If you look at Rashi in Bava Kamma, it seems to understand it that way. So we saw that this was a major machlokas lahalacha, because do we assume that this is a unique aspect of Zorah, or is it true about as a general Shabbos issue that tells us something about how Shabbos works? So we mentioned last week that Dvar Yehoshua had the tshuva about electricity issues. And this is also relevant to a very major Shabbos machlokas. Comes up a lot in the later literature. So now is as good a time as any to introduce it into the conversation. And I put it on the sheet this morning if you had a chance to see it. The Magen Avraham and the Evan HaOzer. I don't know if anyone had a chance to look at that. So this is a major debate that gets quoted a lot in later literature. That the Magen Avraham basically says, it's on the sheet, it's Reishon and Beis Chaf, the Magen Avraham says that if somebody, the Shulchan Aruch there talks about putting something into a mill on Erev Shabbos that's going to grind it up on Shabbos. There's a whole discussion, what if it makes noise, various Darabanan issues. Sounds like it's not a Daraisa issue. And the Magen Avraham goes on to say that maybe even a big Chiddush, you could even do this on Shabbos. That you could put something, to grind something up directly on Shabbos is a malacha. We're almost up to that malacha. Right after Borer is Toche. But if you're not doing it directly, but the mill is powered by water, say it's by a river, so the water is going to come later and push the mechanism of the grind of the mill so that it's going to grind up something later. So the Magen Avraham basically understands you're not doing that, the water mill is doing it, and therefore that's probably not Asur D'Oraisa, maybe not even Asur D'Rabbanan. That's what he assumes based on this. So what he's basically saying is that here you have a malacha which you are bringing about happening through the forces of nature, but still you're pater because you're not doing it, nature is doing it. Okay? It has big impact for timers. So we could talk about the halakha lemaisa implications of that. But there's a couple of different things going on. The fact that you're doing it on Shabbos and then letting the mechanism take over later. So there's major, major ramifications of this whole debate. That's why it gets drawn on so much in later literature. We could talk about it later. But just right now, it draws on the Zorah point. Because here, the Magen Avraham seems to be assuming that basically Zorah is unique. There's one malacha where you could let the forces of nature do the work for you and your chayiv. But other than that, that's not the case. And the Evan HaOzer, which is printed in the back of the Shulchan Aruch, if you look it up tomorrow morning, you can look it up as well. The Evan HaOzer, I mean, again, you could look up other things. It's just an interesting thing to be aware of. I think it's the highest priority if you look up right now. But the Evan HaOzer disagrees with his Magen Avraham. And he talks about putting a leech on your body in order to extract blood. Once upon a time, they thought this was a beneficial thing to do. So, strictly speaking, extracting blood is a malacha of Chabalah. So here you'll say, let's say I were to do this myself by putting a leech on my body that later on, eventually, is going to suck out the blood. So he assumes this is completely asur min haTorah. This is a full malacha of Chabalah. That even though I'm not doing it myself, but I am putting into process a natural process that's going to do it, so he thinks that is a full malacha, and he invokes, how do I know that it's a full malacha? Bava Kamma Daf Samach. Right? Zorev Ruach Mesayaso, Malachas Machsheves by Shabbos. This is what's going on. It's a Malachas Machsheves Chiv, just like we see by Zorah. And you ask me the Magen Avraham, Magen Avraham is wrong. He explicitly disagrees with the Magen Avraham in this discussion. It's a different section of Shulchan Aruch. It's a different area of Halacha. But he says that he is differing with the Magen Avraham based on this, and essentially it seems to be a very parallel issue. Right? So if you do a Malacha, you want to bring about a Malacha, you start the process and let nature take over. So here the Magen Avraham is saying that in general that's a Ptur. In general, that's not called a malacha. Apparently, Zora is unique. And the Evan Ozer is saying, no, we see from Zora that such an action would be a full liability, and that's a total malacha. Hi.
It's possible that it's not such a good example, and that really the leech case would be more psik resha, because with the water is always flowing, but with the leech, it only starts sucking blood when you put it on your skin properly.
But why should that be an issue of when it happened? The fact is, you want the psik resha, as we also discussed a little bit yesterday, psik resha is only a relevant concept if you're not trying to do the malacha. Right here, you're trying to do it. You want this bleach. You put it there because you want it to suck out the blood.
Right.
Right. So you are trying to do chavala. It's just instead of taking a needle and doing it yourself, you're putting in a process that's going to happen later. So the psik resha is not really a relevant terminology. We only come on to psik resha when you're doing action A with no real interest that it should do malacha B. But just it's not, you don't have to come on to nichalei. You're trying to do it. It's more than nichalei. Right, you want this to happen. You are doing this for the purpose of this happening. So psik resha is a modifier of davar shena miskaven. Right, when you're not intending to do a malacha, but it's likely to cause a malacha, so then that's a whole question. And when it's psik resha, it's definitely going to happen. But here, we don't even have to come on to psik resha because you want it to happen. You're trying to bring about this chavala. The only issue is, you're not doing it, you're letting the leech do it. So maybe you could argue that's a ptur. So that's what the Evan Ozer says. No, we see from Zohar that if you come into partnership with nature, you're chayiv. Hi.
Could this be connected to the issue of shlichus and shabbos?
A little bit, except that...
The Magen Avraham would say that there would be it, since you're not doing the ma'aseh at all, so therefore you're not chayiv.
Mm-hmm.
But the Evan Ozer would say, well, since you're causing the malacha to happen, you know, we care about the tzitzah of the malacha,
a little bit. You see, what Sammy's referring to, an issue we talked about at more length last semester, that there were many Achronim who thought that the concept of shlichus, agency in general, I have somebody do something for me, that on Shabbos it's fundamentally irrelevant. That's why the prohibition of asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you is derabanan, because on a level of Menat Torah, you only violate Shabbos when you do a malacha, and if you're having somebody else do malacha for you, that's completely not a violation of the Yisr malacha. It's an Issa Drabana. So that view, Sandy's asking on, is that related to this debate here? So somewhat, but not as much, because the Evan Ozer is not just talking about you're instructing somebody to do something. It's talking about you're doing a Maisa, which the only issue is part of bringing it to the finish line is happening through nature. So you are putting the leech there is really perhaps considered to be the violation of Shabbos because it ultimately brings about the malacha. You are putting the food into the water mill will be considered to be your violation of Shabbos. So all of this very significant Shabbos mafokus all again goes to this basic question about Zohra. What is Zohra? Is Zohra a unique quirk in Hilcha Shabbos? Or is it reflective of some principle? It's really, the wind is not anything unique to Zohar. Any malacha that you do with the wind, you theoretically could be chayiv. So this actually gives us an opportunity to reconsider the Alfei Menashe that we mentioned last week. The Alfei Menashe, we've never heard of, but we've heard of the Bir Halacha, who quotes the Alfei Menashe. Right? What does the Bir Halacha say? He was addressing the Yerushalmi. Right? The Yerushalmi that had said that spinning into the wind is Zohra, and we found that difficult because the Bavli doesn't seem to see that as Zohra. Zohra has to be about dividing good from bad. So one of the suggestions we mentioned, which might be Halacha L'maisa, because the Bir Halacha quotes it, and many later Sfarim accept this, is that the Bir Halacha, according to the Alfei Menashe, that it doesn't mean that you're violating the Malacha of Zohra if you spit into the air. It means you're violating the malacha of carrying. You're causing the spit to go dalet amos. But it says, Mishum Zohra, because just as Zohra uses the wind and you're chayiv, so too, spitting is using the wind and you are chayiv for carrying. So what we were interested in last week is the negative implications of that Alfei Menashe, just that it redefines the Yerushalmi as meaning something else, so that we can limit the prohibition of Zohra. But there are other implications. There are major positive implications of that Alfei Menashe. Right, what's the flip side of what he's saying? He's saying something very much l'chumra at the same time as he's saying something l'kula. Because he's reducing the impact for the purposes of Zohar But at the same time, he's saying something much more significant. What's the more significant implication of the Alpha Menashe?
That you really close the Alpha Menashe is considered
to right, that if I do a different Malacha with the wind, I'll be Chayiv. I could have thought I'd be Potter for that. Right? I could have thought that if I want to pass a note in class, and we're our class is meeting outside in the field, so I just put the note in the air. How I wrote the note, I guess, will itself be a shiloh. But somehow I have a note written before Shabbos, and I want to pass the note, so I pick it up and let the wind carry it. So maybe I should be potter for that, because maybe wind involved malachos or not malachos. So the Alpha Menashe is telling us to chumra. At the same time as he's reducing the scope of Zorah, he's increasing the scope of all the other malachos to include wind. So that was a controversial point. And some of the later Sfarim thought that was very striking, because it's not at all obvious that that's true, right? It's not at all obvious that other malachos work that way. Maybe this is a quirk that is unique to Zorah. The Birkas Shimon, not to be confused with the Rabbi Baruch Simon, a different Baruch Shimon, so Baruch Shimon Schneerson is the Chibiner Rosh Hashiva, and has the Sfarim by that title. His Shiurim on Shabbos is quoted in some other works, where he suggests that really it's a very non-obvious point to assume that other malachos done through wind should be chayiv. But maybe you could say, especially if you look at the Rush, right? The Rush and Bava Kamma seem to be saying that, okay, this malacha only happens through wind, so that's why you're chayiv for it. So maybe here the advantage is that it happens immediately. That it's not like some of these other cases where nature will come along later and finish it off, like either the Magen Avraham's case or the Ebn Ezer's case with the windmill or the leech. But the wind will immediately take it from point A to point B. So it's not like there's any time lag. Maybe that's what the Alpha Menashe is getting at. But maybe we can limit the scope of his point to say that you have the wind immediately complete your action. So then that's one thing. But if there's more of a time lag, if it's more of a separation between your action and nature taking over, maybe we wouldn't necessarily assume that way. So again, that's all a very significant machlokes. But if we take everything that we've said today and we consider some of the implications, so let's consider what have we looked at. Right? So we looked at the question of how the malachos of Borer and Zorah can be considered malachos at all, considering the fact that they seem to be negative in nature. We tried to figure out what distinguishes the three malachos from each other. Is it their format? Is it what they're doing? Is it how they do it? Is it the fact that they're all required parts of one big process? And we tried to figure out other implications of grouping these three together. Can they possibly all get one hasra? Can they possibly combine for one shir? And to what extent are their differences relevant? Do we focus very much on the surah? So if a malacha is not being done with the actual wind, it's being done with your mouth, or it's being done with your hand as opposed to the kli, how much are those differences significant? And to what extent is the wind a quirk, so to speak, or is it a general principle that Zorah is no different than anything else? Any malacha that involves the wind will also be chayiv. So all of these questions go to defining what Zorah is about. Is Zorah a positive, negative action? Is it an action that just makes the cut for a technicality or for its protexia, but it's really negative? Is it a malacha that's essentially the same as the other two separation actions? Is it a malacha that involves the wind as a fundamental part of its definition? Or no, wind is relevant to any malacha. It just happens to be that Zorah is one of many malachos that uses it more as a matter of course. So we could suggest that taking all of this together really tells us that Zorah earns its place on the list. It's kind of a combination of anything we've said so far, because it has a unique hagdara to it. It has a unique definition. That we have three malachos, which are very similar, that are all about separating ochel from zolas. But there are important ways to distinguish them. And for example, one that we didn't get to yet, but we'll see it's going to come out, is that really even Merakev is distinct from the other two, because Merakev is more positive in nature. Merakev, you're sifting something, so you're really dealing with the good, and you're letting the bad fall away. While the other two are more about taking the bad away. Which is why, if you're Medayik in the Balamor, we haven't focused on this yet till now, the Balamor doesn't really ask about all three, which until now we've always assumed are either it's either one or three, but the Balamor focuses on two, right, on Zoreh and Boreh, that those are the ones that are about a negative action, while Merakeid is a positive focus, you're making this flower pure. So within Zoreh and Boreh, so they have their own category within the set of three. But Zoreh and Boreh really are fundamentally different also. Because Boreh is about actively separating out the bad. While Zoreh is a whole different hagdara in separating out the bad. This is a type of separation where a fundamental part of the process is done by the wind, the way it was done in the Mishkan. And therefore, the whole hagdara is not that you have the wind do part of your work for you. It's that that's what the process requires. The process basically means bringing it to the wind. Bringing it to that stage where the wind takes over. Which makes it really fundamentally different than Boreh. It has the same goal of separating good things from bad things. But it happens in a completely different type of way. And maybe that focus is so important that it's really a fundamental definitional issue. And that's why maybe even blowing with your mouth already is a radical difference, because now it's something you're doing yourself instead of bringing it to that stage. And the fact that you need all three of these to make bread, also indicative of the fact that there are three different processes here that are all about good-bad distinctions, but there's still three fundamentally different processes here. So especially if we say that Zoreh is unique in its wind relationship, as opposed to those who would broaden it, like the Evan Ozer, maybe like Rashi, like one side in that Dvar Yehoshua. So we're not saying here that there's any concept here about what wind does when you partner up with wind. Question about the Alpha Menashe, etc. But we're saying that the Hagdara of Zoreh, it's not an innovative idea all of a sudden that here we're letting wind do your work for you. But that the nature of the Malach is bringing it to that stage where now the wind takes over. So that's a different type of tikkun. Bringing it to that point where the wind can do what it has to, maybe that's a unique tikkun that Zoreh reflects. And therefore, essentially, Zoreh, Boreh, Merakeid, three different types of tikkunim. Three different types of process, which are all part of the broad good from bad family, but each one has its own fundamental focus, which gives it its own seat at the table and its own reason to be listed. Any questions about any of that? Does that make sense, more or less? Okay, so if you have any questions, please feel free to follow up. God willing, tomorrow.